All right, so we'll say good morning. So today's daf is Pei Zayin 87. Another beautiful day ahead of us. We are picking up on Pei Vav Amud Beis 86b, and we're picking up Emirat Hashem Man Ninhu. Let's begin. So four lines up from the bottom. So we'll say our shir this morning is dedicated by the Ehrenfeld family. Unfortunately, the grandfather of David and Yonah Ehrenfeld passed away. Levayis today. We dedicate our learning today. L'zecher Nishmaso Gedalia ben Yaakov HaKohen. We hope that in the merit of our Talmud Torah's Nisham will have an aliyah and his family a nechama. And those, of course, in the Zuchus of Rafua Shalema for Tamar Adina Baskina Shulamis, we hope that in the merit of our Talmud Torah, she will have a complete and enduring Rafua. So we'll say, so says the Gemara, Man Ninu, we actually read this yesterday, but let's just begin over here. Man Ninu Shlosh HaMelshim, who are the three men who came to visit Avram Avinu? Michal Begavriel Urifael. Three Malochim HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Michal Shebal Vaser Asara. So Michal came to announce the birth of Yitzchak. Rifal Shebal Rapeh Es Avram. Rifal came to heal Avram Avinu. Gabriel Ozon Apecha Stom. So Gabriel came to go ahead and destroy Stom. Ay, Babahok Siv. Vayabaushne HaMalochim Stom Abayra. But yet the pasuk says, so also according to this, it sounds like only one Malach was coming to go ahead and take care of Stom. Yet the pasuk says that two Malochim came to Stom. The Ozon Michal Bahadeh. To teach us that ultimately again Michal went with Gabriel. The Shizve Lelot. To go ahead and save Lot and his family. Dekanami. You could also see this in the pasuk. Vichsev Vayapo Chasa'arim Ha'el. Veloksev Vayapu. So we'll say it says that he destroyed the cities, referring to one Malach, because the other Malach was busy going ahead and saving Lot and his family. Shema Mila. So why is it by the Malach when Avram Avinu invited them in? So as soon as he invites them in, they say, okay, we will do as the master asks. And why is it when it comes to Lot, top of Pei Zayin, the pasuk says that Lot had to pressure them exceedingly to go ahead and accept his invitation? In other words, what Gemara is asking over here is, why is it that the Malachim readily accepted Avram Avinu's invitation, yet at first seemed to hesitate or even decline Lot's invitation? From here we learn that one is permitted to go ahead and refuse someone of lower stature, but you do not refuse someone of higher stature. In other words, when someone who is important asks you for something, you don't perseverate, you don't think about it, but rather you accept. As opposed to when someone of lesser stature goes ahead, one is permitted at first to go ahead and say, let me think about it, or let me contemplate it, and only afterwards accept. So the Gemara says, Ksiv Vecha Paslechem. That's just very beautiful Gemara. So Avram Avinu, when he invites in the guests, so he says, let me get for you some bread. Uksiv Vecha Bokarats Avram. But yet then the Pasuk says, he went to go ahead, and he went to the cow to shech them, to shech meat. So it says, what the Gemara is picking up on is, Avram Avinu invites them in for bread, yet he delivers meat. Amr Rebbe Lazar, what do you see from here? Mekan, this is actually amazing. Shetzadikim Omrim Ma'at Va'osim Harbe. You see from here, the righteous speak little and deliver much. Rishaim Omrim Harbe Va'afilu Ma'at Enam Osim. Rishaim, the wicked, speak a lot, promise a lot, and deliver very little. Very profound. Minalan, where do we learn this from? So we understand where we learn the tzaddik from. That's from Avram Avinu. Avram Avinu invites his guests in for bread, that he ends up giving them fleish, right? He ends up giving them a real suda. What about the Rishoyim? May Ephron, we learn from Ephron, may Karaksiv Eretz Aram Yoshakel Kesef. So remember, again, Avram Avinu wants to purchase Marasa Machpelah from Ephron. So he says to Ephron, I'll buy it from you. How much? And Ephron says, nah, a piece of land that's 400 silver pieces. Beni u ben cha mahi. What's the big deal? We're friends. It's okay. I'm happy to give it to you. Ulubasov ksiv. Yet by the end of the transaction, it says, Vayishma Avraham el Ephron. Vayishkol Avraham li Ephron. Es ha kesef asher diber ba'az ne b'nechis. Arbami o shekel kesef. Over la socher. So we'll say, so not only does Avram Avinu pay the money, but he pays the type of money of that's called over la socher. What does that mean? De lo shakel minei elekantri. Not only did Avram Avinu pay Ephron, but he paid him in the highest value shkalim. what they call kantari. So not only does he pay Ephron, but he pays Ephron with the highest value, the highest value shekel. So the Gemara is saying over here is, I don't know if anyone understood, that Ephron was promising the world. Well, in this case, promising him Rasa Machpelah. Sure, take it, no problem. Aram Avinu also understood he didn't really mean it. And the raya to that is not only did Aram Avinu pay, but he actually paid above market for the parcel of land. Ksiv kamach. Uksiv solas. Well, it's another profound statement. So, on one hand, the pasuk says kemach. So, remember, the pasuk over here that the Gemara is talking about is Vaimar Avraham ha'ohelo. Avraham Avinu comes into the tent to go ahead and tell Sarah that there are guests. And what happens? Vayomer Mahari Shalosh Siim Kemach Soles Lushi Vasi Ugos. And he tells her, quickly prepare three Siim Kemach Soles. Now, Kemach and Soles are two different things. Kemach is more coarse flour, soles is more fine flour. So which one is it? What was he telling her to prepare? So the Gemara says, "Amar Rabbi Yitzchak mikan sha'ishat sara einaha ba'archim yosra min ha'ish." So Rabbi Yitzchak says, from here you see that sometimes the woman of the home, it could be a little bit stingier with hachnasas archim than the man. Now the way the Gemara is arriving at that, based on Rashi, is that Avram Avinu said soles, and ultimately again, or I should say, Sarah said Soles, and Avram Avinu, Sarah said Kemach, and Avram Avinu said Soles. Now you understand, I'll just point out, the Marsha has a different version of this. The Marsha says there's a different reading of the Gemara, and the reading of the Gemara is actually, Avram Avinu said Kemach, and Sarah Imenu said Soles. In which case, again, the Gemara actually yields the reverse conclusion, which is sometimes the man of the home is a bit stingier with the resources of the home versus the woman who is much more charitable. Okay, two different versions of the Gemara. Ksiv Lushi Vasi Ugos. So Avram Avinu tells Sarah, knead the dough and make loaves. Uksiv Vayikach Chema V'chalav Uben Bakar. V'lulechem Lo Aisila Kamayos. So we'll say, interestingly enough, Avram Avinu asked Sarah to prepare bread, but yet when he's actually serving the meal to the Archim, the Torah says that he brings out butter, milk, and then afterwards the meat, but it never says anything about bread. So what happened to the bread? Amr Ephraim Mikasha Talmidosh Rabbi Meir, Mishmeid Rabbi Meir, Avram Avinu Ochel Chulin Betara Haya. This is actually amazing. Avram Avinu ate his chulin. Avram Avinu ate even unconsecrated. Obviously, nothing is consecrated. But Avram Avinu ate his chulin, even his regular food, in a state of ritual purity. This is part of the general motif of Avram Avinu keeping the Torah, and somehow the Avos being connected somehow to the norms that would later on become part of the Torah. So Avram Avinu eats his chulin betara. And therefore, again, v'sari imenu osayon pirsa nida. And that day, sari imenu became a nida. Again, this was part of the miraculous physical restoration that allowed her ultimately to go ahead and give birth. Sari imenu osayon pirsa nida. And therefore, again, because of that, the Avraham Avinu does not end up serving the bread, because ultimately, again, because of her nida status. Vayomre elov. Ayis sara ishtecha. So ultimately, again, so they asked, where is Sarah, your wife? And Avram Avinu says she is in the tent. So the Hodia, so why is this? So what's the point of this exchange? Right? They ask Avram Avinu, where is Sarah? And Avram Avinu responds, she's in the tent. What's the point of this exchange? The Hodia Shesari Imenu Tznua Haisa. This is all to go ahead and teach us the tznius, the incredible modesty of Sarah Imenu. Of Sarah Imenu. If you Yodim hayu malachi asharis shesari imenu ba'ohel haisa. The malachi asharis knew that Sari imenu was in the tent. Elamai ba'ohel. So why ultimately, if they knew she was in the tent, why do they ask Avram Avinu? Right? And why, again, why the need for this dialogue if they knew where she was? Kadei lechaveva al baila. In order to make her beloved in the eyes of her husband. So we'll say, if you take a look at Rashi, Rashi says over here, it's the first short line in Rashi, kadei lechaveva al baila, lehodio shehit sinua mishar chavaroseha, sheno niris, vitzarach lishol achareha. So the point of this was to reinforce to Avram Avinu the tznius of Sarah. And the point of reinforcing the tznius was to go ahead and make her beloved upon her husband. Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Chanina Amar, Kadei L'Shagir La Koshel Bracha. This is actually a very beautiful idea as well. In order to send her the Koshel Bracha, that the Malachim, like Avraham Avinu, gave them apparently wine as well, and they wanted to share the Koshel Bracha with Sari Imenu as a skula for her Bracha. Such a beautiful idea. Tanu Mishnah Rabbi Yossi, Lama Nakud Al Ayo Shebe'elov. So why is it that there are dots on the Aleph, Yud, and Vav of the word a love? So the Gemara said, "Limda Torah derecharetz sheyishal adam ba'achsanya shalo." So we'll say what that teaches us. Meaning, this is the pasuk, "Vayomru a love ayisara ishdecha." So they said to Aram, "Where is your wife?" And Avraham Avinu said, "She's in the ohel. She's in the tent." So the Gemara asks, "Why is it that in the Torah there are dots on top of the aleph, the yud, and the vav of a love, of the word a love?" So whenever you see dots on top of words in the Torah, generally we understand that to mean that those words are there to teach us, or those letters are there to teach us some kind of lesson. So what's the lesson over here? Lim Torah derech eretz sheyishal adam ba'achsan yashalo. So Torah teaches us derech eretz, that a person should go ahead and ask about his hostess, right? That if a person is a guest somewhere, he should inquire about the welfare of the hostess, of the woman of the home. Look at Rashi, Lim de Torah. Rashi says, the idea over here is the Malachim didn't need to ask about Sarah, because again, they knew that she was in the tent, yet they still did. So it teaches us a lesson that a person should inquire about the welfare of the woman of the home. Says the Gemara of Hamar Shmuel, Ein shalim b'shlom isha klal. I, but Shmuel said that it's not appropriate to inquire about the welfare of a woman. Meaning, the idea that the Gemara is saying over here is fine, we'll say. And these are important gedarim in terms of tznius, about how a person interacts with women, with a woman who is not his wife. So the Gemara goes ahead and discusses this yisod, that a person should be careful about the questions they ask about other women who is not his wife. So therefore, there's an opinion that Shmuel says that even about inquiring about the welfare of someone else's wife, Shmuel says again that perhaps that could be a chisor, and that could be a lack in snius. So what's going on over here? To which the Gemara says, Al yidei baila shayni. No. To inquire from a husband about the welfare of his wife, that's absolutely not only okay, but that's appropriate and encouraged. It means trying to find out about women from other sources other than their husbands. That ultimately, again, is a lack of snius. So the Gemara goes weiter. The Gemara says, so remember, Sari Imenu says, after I have become withered, I will have pleasure. So remember, this is when Sari Imenu hears about the fact that she's going to have a child. At first, again, there's shock and disbelief. So she says, could it be after I've become withered, after I've become physically withered, that I'm going to have pleasure? Amar Rav Chista, first wide line, I will say, Pei Zayin Amud Aleph, Pei 87a. Amar Rav Chista, Acher Shenisbala Habasav Rabu Akamatin, after the skin, after the flesh has become withered and the wrinkles have become numerous, nisadein habasar, my flesh became smooth, v'nisbashtu hakamatin, and the wrinkles are straightened out, v'chazru hayofi l'mikoma, and my beauty is restored to what it once was. Ksiv va'adoni zakin, it was an incredible Gemara. So remember again, when Sari Imenu laughs in disbelief about the fact that she's going to have a child, so her wording is, va'adoni zakin, my husband is old. How could this possibly happen? My husband is old. Uksiv, yet interestingly enough, when HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells Avraham Avinu that Sarah laughed in disbelief, so he changes Sari Imenu's words. And he says, well, Sarah laughed and she said, Va'ani zakanti. How could I possibly have a child? After all, I am too old. So why does HaKadosh Baruch Hu change Sari Imenu's own words? Delamosiv HaKadosh Baruch Hu kidik Avraham. God did not give over the message to Avram as it was stated by Sarah. So what do you learn from here? Gadol Shalom. Bosa, you see from here how exceptionally important Shalom Bayis is. Shafilu HaKadosh Baruch Hu Shina Bo. Bosa, even the Ribono Shel Olam changes the truth in order to preserve Shalom Bayis. That's an incredible, incredible yisod. So Ribbono Shel Olam goes at Sari Imenu, laughs, and she says, that's ridiculous, I'm not having a kid, my husband is too old. So Ribbono Shel Olam, when he conveys this to Avram, says, how could I have children? I am too old. Why? Because had God conveyed it as the way Sari Imenu said it, it could have been a potential affront to Avram Avinu in order to preserve their Shalom Bayis. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, which Shmuel says is an incredible yisod. Now, one has to be very careful how they apply this concept about changing the truth for the preservation of Shalom Bayis, because one could obviously say, yeah, this is a very slippery slope, but it tells you something amazing. I'll tell you just an incredible application. You know, sometimes people think, and again, listen to the whole sentence here. Don't zone out after part of it. Right? So sometimes people think that the sign of a good marriage is you share anything and everything with your spouse. Anything and everything. So understand, it is wonderful to have open forms of communication. But if there's something ultimately, again, that's bothering me, if my spouse can help me with it, then wonderful. But you know, sometimes people share things for very selfish motivations. Sometimes I share something because you know, when you get to share something, what happens? Right? It comes off my chest. Like, it's like I lifted a weight from me and I put it on someone else. Understand, that's exceptionally selfish. Because what that's doing is, that's shifting a burden that I have and putting it on someone else. Again, if my spouse can help me with it, then wonderful. But if all I'm doing is trying to unburden myself and burden someone else, then that's exceptionally selfish. The idea being that a person has to be careful with what they say and how they say it in order to preserve proper Shalom Bayis. The Rebbe Shlomo is teaching us, sometimes is a time to share, sometimes is not a time to share, sometimes it's important to share with certain words, sometimes it's important to modify the words just a bit. Obviously, honesty, integrity, open communication are pillars for marriage, but a person also has to be a chacham in terms of how they communicate and what they choose to communicate. A very important yisod. So says the Gemara. Vayomer Hashem al Avram, v'ani zakanti. I'm sorry. Vatomer mimi leil le Avram hinika banim Sara. So also listen to this. So the pasuk says, Vatomer mimi leil li Avraham, who went ahead and said this over to Avraham, or gave this over to Avraham, hinika banim Sara. Sara imenu is nursing children. So we'll say, so the Gemara says over here, Sara kama banim hinika, I'm sorry, kama banim hinika Sara. So we'll say, remember, Sara imenu has one son. So what does it mean when it says that Sara imenu is nursing children, plural? Why does it say plural? Listen to this. Amar Rabbi Levi, Osayom Shekam al Avram es Yitzchak beno, Asa Suda Gidola. On the day that Yitzchak was weaned, Avram Avinu made an incredible Suda. Hayukala umos meradene va'omrim. So we'll say, so what happened? You know, I think some things don't change. People love to talk, and people love to gossip. So what was everyone gossiping about? Va'omrim re'isim zaken uzekina, sheviu asufi min ashuk, va'omrim banenuhu. Do you see this old man and this old woman who brought an asufi? Right? Asufi Rabbi says a child abandoned in the marketplace. So this old couple, they went ahead and they got this kid abandoned in the marketplace, this baby abandoned in the marketplace. And what happened? They brought it home and they claim that it's theirs. They're pretending like they had this child. But not only that, and now they're spending all of this money on this big party to solidify this ruse, to solidify this story that this is their kid. Meanwhile, everyone knows it's not their child. They just found this child in the marketplace. To which the Gemara says, Ma'asa. So remember again, it's exceptionally important that it become clear to everyone that Yitzchak is the biological child of Avram and Sarah. So what does Avram Avinu do? Ma'asa Avram. Ma'asa Avram Avinu. Halach v'zimin kol gedoli hadar. So what happened? Avram Avinu invited all the great men of the generation. V'sari minu zimna es nishoseim. And Sari minu invited their wives. V'chol achas v'achas hevia b'na ima. And what happens? Every single woman who had young children brought her children with her. U'menik salo hevia. But Sari minu said, you could come, but your wet nurses are not invited. What happens? V'na'a senes b'sari minu. V'niftechu dadea kishnei ma'ayonos v'heniku eskulon. And a miracle occurred, and Sari Imenu nursed all of the children. She nursed all of the children. And therefore, again, this was the, because we'll say, see, understand, what was the nes, the miracle ultimately was that at the end of the day, if she didn't give birth, she wouldn't have the ability to nurse. The fact that she was able to go ahead and nurse all of these children, that showed everyone beyond the shadow of a doubt that this baby was in fact Sari Imenu's. Va'adayin ha'yumiraninim va'omrim im sara bastishim shana teleid Avram ben mea shana yolid. That's fine. That establishes ultimately again that Sari Imenu is the mother, but how do I know that Avram Avinu is the father? To which the Gemara says, so I'll say, by the way, just, you know, the incredible Musrin this is, you know, when you want to find the problem, like, you know, when you want to find something wrong, there is no shortage to the stuff you could dredge up. Here, Sari Imenu is 90 years old and she's nursing every baby within a 5-mile radius. I'm saying, like she's nursing everyone, and at the end of the day, still, oh, so she's the mother, but Avram Avinu, just by an incredible insight in life, that so much of life is about your disposition. If you want to find problems, you will find problems. If you want to cause trouble, you'll cause trouble. You want to find a deficiency in another, there's no shortage of them. Everything is about the lens through which you decide to view life. So, okay, people are now saying, Avraham Avinu is not the father. So what happens? Miyad nepach klesh panim shel Yitzchak v'nina l'Avram. So let's say in that moment, Yitzchak Avinu's facial features changed, and he began to look like Avraham Avinu. Pasru kulum v'amru, Avram holy des Yitzchak. So we'll say, so in that moment, finally, after people see that Sarimini was nursing the children, and after again, Yitzchak looks like Avram, then finally everyone admitted that Avram had given birth to Yitzchak. So it says the Gemara something amazing. Ad Avram, lo haya zikna. But this is amazing. Before the days of Avram Avinu, there was no old age. Man da have a boy, so what happened? Man da have a boy le mishtai b'hadi Avram, mishtai b'hadi Yitzchak. So what happened? Because again, there was an old age, and we just established that what Avram and Yitzchak looked alike. So somebody wanted to speak with Avram, spoke with Yitzchak, b'hadi Yitzchak, mishtai b'hadi Avram. Somebody wanted to speak with Yitzchak, came and spoke, meaning people would confuse Avram and Yitzchak. Asa Avram. Avram came along, and what happened? Boy rachmi v'havi zikna. He davened for old age, and old age came. So what's this meaning? In other words, what this is saying is, he davened for people to change with old age as they got older, and therefore old age said in Shene Emar, v'Avraham zakin ba bayomim. Because what's what the Gemara is picking up on over here is that Avram Avinu is the first person in the Torah by whom it is recorded zikna. Old age. Now remember again, Avraham Avinu, by no stretch of the imagination, has the longest lifespan in the Torah. Remember again, certainly before Noah, people lived much longer, yet Zikna itself is only mentioned by Avraham Avinu, to which the Gemara says, Avraham Avinu davened for Zikna. But say, by the way, there's a very profound Yisod in this Gemara as well. What does this mean, Avraham Avinu davened for Zikna? Because people would confuse him and Yitzchak. Avraham Avinu understood that sometimes it's important for children to not live in the shadow of their parents. It's important, especially if a person has a great father. Sometimes, again, it's easy for the child to become eclipsed by the shadow of a great parent. Avram Avinu Davin, I shouldn't look like my son. You know, people were confusing Avram with Yitzchak, Yitzchak with Avram. But again, at the end of the day, I shouldn't look like my son. He should be able to establish his own identity. And therefore, Avram Avinu Davin's for Zikna, weiter. Ad Yaakov, Bahavachushab, said this is wild. Until Yaakov Avinu, there was no illness. Also, Yaakov comes along. Yaakov davened for illness. I was saying, it wasn't mean there was an illness. There was an illness before death. Now look at Rashi. Rashi says something amazing. So what would happen? So meaning people would not go ahead and get sick before they died. So again, remember Chazal tell us, we saw the other Gemaras that bring down people. A person would sneeze. Right, a person would sneeze, and ultimately, again, they would die. Which makes sense, because at the end of the day, remember, everything happens through the nose. Meaning, remember, Vayipach Ba'apav, the Yimoshon blew life into the nose of Adam HaRishon. If when a person died, the neshama would exit the body. Right? This is where again, some have the custom to say L'chaim upon sneezing, Gezuntai, all those variations of somehow blessing people when they sneeze come from this death motif associated with sneezing. This is, by the way, that on Matzei Shabbos, we use besamim. Why do you use besamim? Because you say that the neshama is sad, that the neshama yisera, the extra additional dimension of spirituality that we have on Shabbos, leaves us. What does that do with the sense of smell? Because the sense of smell is most closely associated with the neshama. It's the one sense that is most closely associated with the neshama. Nadav and Aviu, right? Chazal say that when they died, by Akivu Ish Zara, so Chazal Brinan, the Gemara brings down that the fire went through their nostrils. So everything is a strong association between the nose, between the sense of smell, and between, again, one's neshama. So originally, before Yaakov Avinu, a person died, they sneezed, that was it. Yaakov Avinu davened for sickness. Why did he daven for sickness? So Rashi says over here, again, Sheyachla adun lefimosov yitzav lebeso. We'll say because sickness before death could be a gift. How so? Because the sickness indicates to us, also we see this all the time, sometimes the most turbulent situations is where there's sudden death. Sudden death. A person is ill, so there's the ability to prepare. Even if it's tragic circumstances, there's the ability to prepare. There's the ability to instruct one's household. There's the ability to say whatever it is that has to be said, to go, whatever it is. So before Yaakov Avinu, ultimately, again, That didn't happen. Yaakov davened. Understand all of these Gemaras, what the Gemara is picking up on by Avram Avinu and by Yaakov Avinu, is that there are, we'll call it life cycle events that were never recorded before. So Avraham Zokain, we never saw that word before. We never saw that word before in Chumash. Hine Avicha Chole, your father is ill, we never saw that before. So that leads Chazal to understand that the Torah mentions it by these individuals to teach us that these dynamics came on the scene by these individuals. Adasa Alisha. It's actually also really interesting. Until Elisha came along, Elisha the Navi, right? Elisha is the primary disciple of Eliyahu Navi. So Adda Asa Elisha, lo hava de chavush v'itbach. There was no such thing as a person who had become sick and was then healed. Asa Elisha, ba'irachmi v'itbach. Elisha was the first person to become deathly ill and to daven to be healed. Shene emar. Elisha became sick at the end of his life with the illness from which he would ultimately die. Which indicates thus that he had become sick earlier, but yet had recovered from that. Elisha became sick three times as a result of three events. Number one, one because he pushed away Gehazi with two hands. We know the famous story with Gehazi. Remember again, Naaman, who was the general of Aram, comes to Elisha to be healed from his tzaras. And what happens? Elisha heals him by telling him to immerse in the Yarden, the Jordan River. Naaman says, let me pay you. So remember again, Elisha says, no thank you, don't have to pay me. So Naaman goes on his way. Naaman goes back home, and as he's going back home, Gehazi runs after him and says, you know, my master changed his mind, he wants gold, which of course wasn't true. So Elisha finds out what Gehazi did, and he essentially pushes Gehazi away, literally, right, out of the community. Gehazi becomes a Metzora. He's stricken with Tzaras. So Chazal fault Elisha for pushing Gehazi away with two hands. In other words, he pushed Gehazi away too hard. There are times where you have to distance people from you. There are times that people have to be rebuked. There are times that people have to be distanced. But even when you distance someone, it has to be done again with a sensitivity, with a love, and not with two hands. Ve'echad shegira dubin betinokos. And remember again, this is when Elisha first becomes Navi. Remember again, there was the episode where the young men taunted him and teased him, and then they were attacked by bears. He's held responsible for that. And then again, the third sickness he had was the sickness he died from. And Elisha ultimately became sick with the illness that he would ultimately die from. So again, we'll say, so now we get back to the Mishnah. This signals the end of our Agarata for now. And now back to our Mishnah. So remember again, we had the case in the Mishnah of Rabbi Yochanan ben Masya, who sent his son to hire workers, and then what happens? The son hired the workers, and Rabbi Yochanan ben Masya says, quick, you better go ahead and tell them that even though you promised them food, you're just going to give them basic food, because if you don't, go ahead and restipulate, even if you give them like the suda of Shlomo HaMelech, it's not going to be enough. So says the Gemara, Amar Le Rav Acha, I'm sorry, Amar Le Rav Acha, Rabbi Yosef. So again, and he said to his son, go and tell them that they only have a claim against me for pasuk kitnis, bread and legumes. Pas kitnis tanan. Do we read the Mishnah as telling them they only have a claim for pas kitnis, legume bread, which would be even an inferior form of bread, or pas vikitnis? Or is he telling them they have a claim against me for bread and legumes? Amrlei. Through Rav Yosef responded, "Ha Elokim, I swear it's tzricha vav. You need the vav. In other words, it's pas ukitnis, right?" And he says, "Kimorida delivros. You need a vav the size of the oars of the boatmen of the Livros River." What does that mean? That understand? It's not that he's promising them legume bread. It's that basic staples for your workers were pas ukitnis. that you promised a worker bread as well as legumes. Fine. Rav Shimon Gamliel Omer Ein Atzarach Kol Kibbutz Nagamadina. So Rav Shimon Gamliel says, no, you don't have to say anything explicit to the workers. Rather, again, if you promise them food, it's understood that you're not giving them a seven-course meal. Rather, again, you're giving them in accordance with what is the Minag HaMedina, the norm. Hakol Asuye Mai. What does the word Hakol come to include? So the Gemara says, Asuye Hodisnan. It comes to include the following. Hasokha Es HaPol Va'amrlo Ke'echadu Kishnayim Im Nehayir. This is interesting. If you hire a worker, and if you tell him, I'm going to pay you like one or two of the workers of the city. In other words, what I say I do is, I say I'm going to pay you like someone in the city, like one or two of the guys in the city. It doesn't mean I'm going to pay you double wage. I'm going to pay you in accordance with like what one or two of the people in the city make. So the problem with Chasav Osai is that is a very open-ended statement. What does that mean? Does that, remember again, in the labor force, there are people who make more, there are people who make less, even for the same type of job. So if I hire someone, I tell them, I'm going to give you a salary like one or two of the workers who do this kind of work in the city. What am I obligated to give him? To which the Gemara says, so no say lo kipacho shebesirte Rabbi Yeshua. Rabbi Yeshua says, all I am bound to do is give him the lowest wage for this type of labor. So I figure out what person in the city charges this type of labor, the lowest wage that somebody charges for this type of labor, and that's what I'm obligated to give him. The Chachamim say, Meshamnin Beinehem. I go ahead and will say, and essentially I figure out the salary range for this type of work in the city, and what do? I give him a median salary. I reach a compromise salary amount between the higher end and between the lower end. Fine, says the Mishnah. So Bosa, again, remember, in this parak, our focus is workers' rights. Workers' rights, the entitlements of an employee. So says the Mishnah, Ve'elu ochlin min ha-Torah. The Bosa, these are the people, these are the workers, who when they are working in a field, are permitted to eat of the produce that they are working with. So this is a special entitlement that the Torah gives, the Paul and Torah gives to laborers, and when they're working with certain types of produce, they are permitted to eat what they are working with. So ve'elu ochlin min ha-Torah, these are the people who are biblically entitled to go and consume from the produce with which they are working. Be'mechubar l'karka. So I'll say number one, we're talking about things that are attached to the ground. Shas gemar melacha. So when are you permitted to eat? Number one, only of items that are finished products. B'shas gemar melacha. Rashi says over shkishatolshin also. Number one, you can only consume it during the harvest season. So again, if I'm working with items that are mechubar l'karka, the only time I'm permitted to go ahead and partake of those items is b'shas gemar melacha, at the harvest time. So at the harvest season, when I'm harvesting the produce for the owner of the field, I, the employee, am permitted to go ahead and partake of some of this produce as well. U'betalush, and if we're talking about betalush min hakarka, if we're talking about detached produce, achlo nigmara mimelachto. I can only partake of it when? Only when the item is not yet a finished product. Now what does this mean? Take a look at Rashi. Achlo nigmara mimelachto, lemaiser. So we'll say this is interesting. If I'm dealing with detached produce, I am only permitted to partake of it as an employee if it is not yet subject to the tithing requirement. But once it becomes subject to the tithing requirement, I, as an employee, am no longer permitted to partake of this produce. And both say, again, at the end of the day, the ability for an employee to partake of produce that he's working with only applies to items that grow from the ground. The elu she'ein ochlin. And these are the items of Osai with which if I'm working with them, I cannot partake of them. Ha'osav ha'mukhor l'karka. If somebody is working with attached produce, b'sha'a she'ein gemar melacha, at a time that it is not the harvest season. Rashi says, for example, if somebody's weeding onion plants, if I'm weeding onion plants, it's not yet time to go ahead and uproot the onion plants. I cannot partake of the produce. Say, if it's detached produce, at a time that it has already become subject to tithes, I cannot go ahead and partake of it. And of course, something that does not go ahead and grow from the ground. So for example, Rashi points out, if I milk cows, I don't have the right to go ahead and partake of the milk while I'm milking the cows. Why? Because that is a davar shein gidul min ha'aretz. So essentially, again, the Mishnah teaches me three principles. Number one, if I'm working with attached produce, if it is the time of the harvest, I, as the employer, am permitted to partake of the produce. If I'm working with detached produce, as long as it is not yet subject to tithes, I can go ahead and partake of it. But if I'm working with produce, or if I'm working with an item that does not grow from the ground, under no circumstances am I permitted to go ahead and partake of that item. Says the Gemara, Menahani Mili. So we'll say, how do we know this? Rashi says, Menahani Mili, the Paul Ochem Mukhobar. So we'll say, how do we know this principle that a worker is entitled to partake of attached produce from the ground? So the Gemara says, Dichsiv, Kisava Bekem Reacha, Vachalta. So we'll say, so the Pasuk is pretty explicit. Torah says, when you will come into the vineyard of your friend, so the Pasuk says, Vachalta Anavim Kinafshecha. You will eat as many grapes as you want. Eat as many grapes as you want. So I understand that this law applies to a vineyard. Now, say we're going to discuss this applies to a worker, right? This doesn't apply if I walk into someone's vineyard, I can eat whatever I want. This is if I'm working in the vineyard, and again, we'll discuss, I'm harvesting the grapes. The Torah says what? The Torah says you can eat whatever you want, right? We'll see this caveat. I can't put it in my utensils to take it home, but while I'm working in the field, I can go ahead and eat whatever I want. So fine. The Gemara says, Ashkechon Karen. Now I know this halacha by a vineyard. Me call mili minolon. Where do I know this? We'll say about other fields, right? About other types of produce. Kamrina mi karen. We learn it out from a vineyard. Ma karen miyucha davar shegidu lekarko b'shas k'mar melacha. So we'll say, just like again, a karen, a vineyard is unique in that the grapes grow from the ground. U'b'shas k'mar melacha. And the Torah tells me that I can go ahead and partake of the grapes at the harvest season. Poel ochabo, and the Torah tells you that a worker is permitted to partake of it. So what we learn that kerem is not, kerem creates the paradigm. Af kol dover shegedule karko, so to any produce that grows in the ground, bishas gimar melocha, at the time of the harvest season, poel ochabo, the worker is permitted to partake of it. So we'll say, so kerem becomes the paradigm for all other types of fields. Aye, but mala kerem shken chayev ba'olalos. But I will say, but 1 second. Maybe kerem cannot serve as a paradigm. Why can't kerem serve as a paradigm? Because kerem, a vineyard, has other unique halachas associated with it. Namely, what? Ololos. So we'll say, what's ololos? Ololos is the halacha that when you are harvesting your grapes, any underdeveloped clusters have to be left for the poor. Right? It's kind of like a leket shichacha halacha by vineyards. So maybe a vineyard is different in that it has a din of ololos. So maybe you can't learn out other things from keren. So you must remember again, in general, in order for a particular concept to serve as a paradigm, it can't have any peculiar or unique features. What the Gemara is suggesting is you want to use kerem as the paradigm to say that whenever a worker is working with attached produce during the harvest season, he's permitted to partake of the produce that he is harvesting. To which the Gemara says, well, maybe kerem can serve as a paradigm because kerem does have a unique feature. What's the unique feature? Ololos. Okay, fine, says the Gemara. Kamina mikama. We can learn about, say, from the case of standing grain. What's the, right? That may, just like when a worker is harvesting standing grain, he's permitted to partake of the grain. So to any time you are harvesting attached produce, the worker could go ahead and partake of the produce. I kama gufa minala. 1 second. Where do we know that when a worker is harvesting standing grain, that he has the right to partake of the grain when he's harvesting it? Because the pasuk says, when you will come to the standing grain of your friend, the katafta mililos biyadecha. The pasuk says, you could take some of the kernels in your hand. You could take some of the kernels in your hand. So we'll say, so again, what is this pasuk talking about? So this pasuk is talking about, I'm working in Reuven's field, I'm harvesting his wheat. When I'm harvesting his wheat, I'm permitted to eat some wheat kernels, to which the Gemara says, and therefore, let's use kama, let's use standing grain as the paradigm to teach me any time I'm working with attached produce during the harvest season, I, the worker, have the right to partake of the produce. I, but malakamesh kin chayev es b'chala. So we'll say standing grain is different, because standing grain is also subject to the laws of chala. Therefore, because it has this unique aspect, perhaps it cannot serve as a paradigm. Umimai, dahai kama, kama de mechayev es b'chalahi. So I'll say, how do I know the standing grain that we're talking about over here is the type of grain that is subject to chala? Dilma kol kama ka'amar rachmana. Perhaps the Torah is talking about all types of kama. Now, Bosse, and we will discuss this. Not all types of standing grains are chayiv in chala. So this is talking about general grains, even the ones that are not subject to chala. The Gemara says, Asya kama kama, I'm sorry. Dilma kol kama kama rachmana. Asya kama kama. So we can make a gzir shavav kama kama. It says over here, when you will come into the field of the standing grain of your friend, So Bosa remember again, this is talking about by the Karban Omer. The Karban Omer was brought from barley, and the pasuk is from the time you will take the sickle to the standard grain. Remember again, barley is the first grain that would mature in the fields. So from the time you bring the sickle to the standing grain, we know that's referring to barley. Ma hosam kamad mechayva b'chalo. So we'll say, just like by the Karban Omer, we're talking about grain that is subject to the challah requirement. Av hachanami kamad mechayva b'chalo. So over here, we're talking about the type of grain that is chayav in challah. So we'll say, therefore, if we're talking about over here, the type of grain that is chayav b'chalo, so maybe we cannot use this to create a paradigm for workers' rights of consumption during harvest season. Ikal mifrach, but you could bring a pirka. Malakama shekin chayeves b'chalo. Kalim yochiyach. So fine. So therefore, I can't use kama, I can't use standing grain to create the paradigm to teach me that anytime a worker is working with attached produce, that he's permitted to go ahead and eat it, right? I can't bring a raya from kama. Why? Because kama has a unique aspect, and that it's chayv and chalo. Fine, so maybe we should prove the concept of create the paradigm from kerem, from vineyard. You can't do that, because what did we say before? Malak kerem shekein chayv ba'ololos. Fine, kama tochiyoch. V'chazer hadin lo ra'i zekra izeh. So what do you see from here? We see that on one hand, again, we have two potential sources for this concept in halacha. The halacha being that when a worker is working with attached produce, he has, during the harvest season, he has the right to partake of it. So we have two potential sources. One source is kerem, vineyard. The other source is kama. The problem is standing grain. The problem, each of them has their own unique, peculiar halachic aspect. Kerem has ololos, right? Undeveloped clusters. Kama has chala. So what do we say? So zatzad shava shabayin. So what says? What is the common denominator between kerem and kama? Shekein dover shekidule karko b'shas kamar melacha pol ochabo. What is the common denominator between these two things? Is number one, they're attached to the ground, and workers have the right to go ahead and partake of the produce during the harvest time. So because use one as a paradigm, I could create ultimately a paradigm from both of them combined. Af kol dover shekidule karko. So we'll say, therefore, I will say at Sada Shava, a common denominator, which then creates a paradigm, which is that what? That any time a worker is working with something that is attached to the ground during the harvest season, he has the right to partake of the produce. Why don't I say Mala at Sada Shava Shabahan, Shekin Yeshban Sad Mizbeach? But I could say maybe the common denominator, Rabosai, is what? The common denominator between kama, standing grain, and kerem, vineyard, is that they are both offered up on the Mizbeach, to which the Gemara says, well, one second. If that's the case, Rabosai, then we should include, again, olives in this halacha as well, because olives also have a tzad Mizbeach. Olives are also offered on the altar, to which the Gemara says, but you're going to learn out Zayas, that Rabbo said that halacha is if I'm harvesting olives, right? And it's harvest season that I can partake of the olives from my employer's field. Do I need a ma'at sad for that? After all, who gufe keramikri? Olives are themselves are called a kerem, are called a vineyard. Tichsiv vayivar migadish va'ad kama va'ad kerem Zayas. Amara papa. Kerem zayis ikri, kerem stama lo ikri. So we'll say no, because a zayis, right, an olive field, I don't know, is it an olive field or olive grove, right? An olive grove, right, is called not, it's not called the regular kerem, it's called the kerem zayis. Fine. Miko makam kasha, ela amar shmuel, so we'll say nevertheless the kasha still stands, so how do we resolve this? Ela amar shmuel, amar kra, the chermesh. So we'll say, listen to this. The pasuk says, chermesh, which chermesh is a sickle, the rabbos called ba'ale chermesh, to come to include anything rabbosai that is removed by the sickle. In other words, that this halacha, this mahatzad, ultimately, the mahatzad that teaches us that any time a worker is working with produce that is attached to the field at the harvest season, he has the ability to partake of the produce. That only applies to the type of produce that's removed with the sickle. V'hai chermesh mi boili b'shas chermesh echol, shlo b'shas chermesh lo sechol. But one second, that chermesh teaches us something else. That the right of a worker to consume produce, Rabbi Osei, is only when? At the time of the sickle, i.e. at the time of the harvest season. But if it's not the harvest season, the worker does not have the right to partake of the produce. to which the Gemara says, "Ahu may the El Kel Yochalo Sifei Nafka." We actually learned that out from the phrase of Osai, that you shall not put it into your utensils. In other words, that when you are harvesting for the owner of the field and placing the produce in his utensils, you as the worker have the right to partake of the produce, but you do not have the right to place the produce in your utensil. In other words, you could eat what you want on the job, you can't take anything home. So we see from here that it's talking about the harvest season, because you're putting it into the utensils of the balabos, to which the Gemara says, so I understand now that these halachos apply to something that is harvested with a sickle, but how do I know that it applies to other attached items that are not harvested with a sickle? So what's rather Rabbi Yitzchak says, the phrase kama rabose comes to teach us, kol ba'ale kama. Kol ba'ale kama rabose means anything that is mechubar lekarko. So the word kama teaches me that this halacha, that a worker has the right to eat attached produce at the time of the harvest season, applies to any type of produce that is attached to the ground. I b'ha amrit kama de mechayv b'chala. But you just said before that we used the word kama to create a gzeirah shava, teach that the only type of standing grain that is subject to this halacha, or the type of standing grain that is chayv and chala, hanimili mikamei dinesi chemish. That was before we brought the drasha of chemish, of the sickle, hashta da asi chemish. Now that we brought the drasha of the chemish, israbile kol debar chemish. It teaches us that anything Rabbo saying that is harvested with the sickle, the apa gav de lo mechayiv v'chala, and this is true even if the object itself or the produce itself is not subject to chala. So the Gemara says, kama lamali. If that's the case, why do I need the word kama? The Rabbo is called baale kama to teach Rabbo saying that this halacha of the worker's ability to go ahead and consume all attached produce at the time of the harvest season applies to all types of or anything that is mechubar lekarka, anything that's attached to the ground. The hashta de nafgalad. Now that I'm learning it, I'll say from chermish and from kamo. Kisavo bekem reyacha lamali. Why do I need the phrase of kisavo bekem reyacha? If I come to the vineyard of my friend, this is very important. Amarava lahalachosav. Bosse, this teaches us halachos. What are the halachos? Kidisanyo. Kisavo ne'emar. The pasuk says when you will come into the vineyard of your friend. Ne'emar kan bia. It says over here entry. Ve'ne'emar lahalon lo savo alav hashemesh. And it says over there, Bosse, this is actually talking about paying your workers. It says by paying your workers, that's what? That the sun shall not set upon it. You have to pay your workers in a timely fashion. Ma lahalon b'pa'al akasim adaber. That's like, just like Rabbosai, it says over there, by wages, talking about my worker. So afkan b'pa'al akasim adaber. That Rabbosai, so too over here, by kisava b'kem reyacha. See, Rabbosai, here's what's interesting. The pasuk says, kisava b'kem reyacha, when you come into the vineyard of your friend, v'achalta anavim menafshecha. You could eat as much grapes as you want during the harvest season. The pasuk doesn't explicitly say that it's dafka referring to a worker. In other words, if you read the pasuk literally, it sounds like that if I walk into my friend's field, if I walk into somebody's field during the harvest season, I could eat whatever I want. We make a gzir shava of bia. It says, kisavo bia entry over here, by the case of the eating of the grapes. And it says, lo savo, right? Same notion of bia, by delaying wages. Just like by delaying wages is talking about my employee, so too the bia over here, the entry over here, by the consumption of the grapes during the harvest season is also talking about my employee to teach me that what? To teach me that halacha lemaisa again. This right to consume produce during the harvest season only applies ultimately to a poultry worker. Tomosi, we'll stop over here for today. So again, just understand what we are really driving at over here is an incredible yisod, which is this right. So now let's go with what we've established. What we've established is based on the drushas of kama and chermesh, we now understand that the right of a worker to consume produce during the harvest season applies to any kind of produce that is attached to the ground. Whether it's subject to chala, not subject to chala, doesn't make a difference. If it's attached to the ground, then ultimately, again, it is subject to these halachas. The worker has the right. Now what we've also established is that even though the pasuk doesn't explicitly make mention of the worker, the gzeir shav of bia teaches us that this right is limited to a worker, and Emir HaTzisham will further define these rights, Emir HaTzisham in the Gemara tomorrow. Oh.